Hi, I'm Steve Mabb, Chair of the Australian Shareholders Association, and we're proud to be hosting the 2024 Investor Conference in Melbourne from the 19th to the 21st of May. And we're stoked that Phil, the host of this podcast, is going to be our special guest MC. If you haven't heard much about the ASA conference, it's a flagship event that attracts around 300 investors and industry professionals, including the chair of National Australia Bank this year, the chair of AGL. We have Dr. Sam Hupert, the founder and CEO of ProMedicus, and we've also got Richard White, the founder and CEO of WiseTech, coming along with many others. For a limited time, new members can enjoy special pricing on registration for the upcoming conference, along with a complimentary 12-month digital membership with the ASA. That's 2-day conference registration plus 1-year ASA membership for $499, a saving of $150. Simply search for Australian Shareholders Conference Register, click on 2-day conference non-member, enter the discount code MEM, as in member, 499, the numbers 499, so that's MEM499 to claim your special offer. Come along and meet me and Phil at the conference. We look forward to seeing you there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shares for Beginners.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners. I love directly answering listeners' questions. So I'd like to thank Sarah, who inspired this episode. She filled out the listener survey and asked some highly pertinent questions about ETFs. Sarah, we'll tackle your questions in this episode. Thanks for your contribution. For more ETF info, check out earlier episodes featuring Kanish Chugh and Robin Bauman. So for this episode, I approached Steve Bull from ETF Watch to deal with these and other questions and chat all things ETF and LIC. Now, Steve, you're the founder and managing director of ETF Watch. Now, ETF Watch is a website and it's an information source for ETF and LIC investors. It has a searchable fund database, a blog, and a news feed. There's a rapidly growing group of investors and financial advisors who are using ETF Watch as their primary ETF and LIC information source. Now, that's a mouthful. Okay, over to you, Steve. How did you get started in this business?
So I've been in and around the industry for about 15 years now in the wealth management space. Started as a graduate at one of the big banks. Actually started kind of a couple of years before the GFC, probably about 2005 I started my career. So it was a really interesting time to sort of start my career when in hindsight, where to if you look back at the charts for the equity markets back in that 2005, 6, early 7 period.
Is that when you started in that time period?
Yeah, that was about when I started my career.
And everything was just
everything
zooming.
It was just leverage, people taking on margin loans and all sorts of risky loans just to get as much money as they could in the market because markets were never going to go down. And then in 2007, the Howard government at the time, with Peter Costello as the treasurer, introduced these super reforms where people could, you know, they made super, they called it Simpler Super, and they made super tax-free for retirees and brought in all of these big changes. But one of the things they brought in was an ability to contribute up to $1 million in super as a one-off between May 2007 and July 2007.
Perfect timing, wasn't it?
So I was working in a what's called paraplanning roles, managing a paraplanning team who are the team that do the technical and documentation for financial advisors. And so all these people were all of a sudden seeing financial advisors going, how do I get $1 million into super? And they were borrowing against other assets and they're doing everything they could to get the money into super. And the business that that we saw was just phenomenal. And then, 12 months later, 2008, the share markets fell 20, 30, 40% in the GFC. And so this $1 million that people put into super very quickly became much less than $1 million, and people were then panicking and withdrawing their money at the bottom of the market. So it was a really valuable lesson in early in my career that, you know, just because there's a tax reason to do something doesn't mean it's the right thing to do if it's not within your, you know, risk appetite.
And really, you have to be able to weather those downs as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, GFCs don't happen very often, but they do happen. We had it in 2008. We had the crash in 87. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they happen during, you know, and there's smaller sort of corrections all the time, 10 and 20%.
I think that's an important lesson, though, and especially for younger listeners. When you look at a chart of, say, the ASX 200 over a long enough period, that period in 2008, 2009 is a minor blip, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, all those losses have long been recovered, and with the dividends that have come with them, it's anyone who stayed in is well in front now. But the worst thing you could do was pull your money out at the bottom, which is what a lot of people did, and those people are never going to recover those losses. So yeah, that was the start of my career. Fast forward a number of years, and in about 2015, started seeing ETFs become, you know, a little bit more popular. I think in that year, in 2015, the ETF market doubled from 10 billion of total assets in Australia to 20, and the products pretty much doubled as well. I think they went from about 60 to 100 products on the market. So kind of I got quite interested in ETFs and what was out there, and tried to find what was available and what different kind of asset classes and different types of ETFs. And all I could find was a PDF that you could download off the ASX website.
They're always useful, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So, they always explain everything.
So couldn't do a lot with that. Like, I couldn't sort it or filter it or do a lot. So
this was an explanation of ETFs,
was it? This was just a list of all the ETFs available.
Yeah.
So it was just this big PDF that was basically a Excel spreadsheet that had been turned into a PDF document saying, here's all the ETFs, here's their fees. And couldn't find a lot else written about them, really, other than the odd media article that said that there was a new ETF launching or something. So I came up with the idea for ETF Watch at that point.
Can I just interrupt for a sec there? Because it's amazing how new these products are, the idea of an ETF. I mean, a year ago, I didn't even know what an ETF was. I'm just ashamed to say.
Yeah.
So it really is new for a lot of investors, isn't it?
Yeah,
which is why we're investigating this.
Yeah,
today.
Well, like I said, they went from 10 to 20 billion in that year. Now, 4 years later, they're at 60, and they're growing by 30% every year. So, you know, within a couple of years, they'll be at 100 billion. And you know, they're growing so rapidly because there's this, you know, and we'll get to it later, but there's just a lot of such great features in them that weren't available to retail investors just a few years ago.
Mm.
So we launched the site, and it's got a database allowing you to search and find the ETFs that meet your needs, whatever that may be. And then we write a lot of content about what's happening in the ETF and LIC market. So the other important fact is that we cover both ETFs and LICs. LICs are listed investment companies, which are both very similar and very different.
Investing in shares can be fun, but the paperwork isn't. ShareSite solves this problem. It's an online portfolio tracking tool that automatically records trades, dividends, ETF distributions, and gives you the reporting tools you need to help you manage your portfolio. ShareSite are pleased to extend a special offer to listeners of this podcast. 2 months free on an annual premium plan. Go to ShareSite.com/shares for beginners and sign up now for a free trial before taking advantage of 2 free months. It'll help you save money at tax time and improve your investing decisions. It's helped me. That's ShareSite.com/shares for beginners. Okay, well, let's go with our simple one-minute explanations. Because as we were just chatting before about trying to explain ETFs and LICs simply for people who don't exactly know what they are. So what's your one-minute simplest explanation of an ETF?
ETF, exchange-traded fund. So the exchange-traded part of that name means that you can buy and sell them on a stock exchange. Second part of the name, fund. Now, so they're a pool of assets that are structured into a fund or a trust, and they could be a pool of any sort of asset. And so they might be a pool of shares, they might be a pool of cash, fixed interest, global shares, Asian shares focused in technology. There's a whole range of different assets they could hold. But what it means for investors is they can access a diversified portfolio of shares with a single trade. If you were to do that yourself without an ETF, you'd have to be making multiple trades to buy all of these different shares, and a lot of them aren't even available to us retail investors.
And the simplest kind of ETF is what they call an index hugger, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can buy the top 200 stocks of the Australian share market with one trade.
Yeah, that's right. And that's where they got really popular because you can access, yeah, like you say, the top 200 Australian stocks or the top 500 US stocks with that one trade at a very low cost. And so the ongoing cost is much lower than traditionally you would have paid for that sort of pool of assets. The other thing that they do, and if anyone has ever invested in managed funds, they're very similar to managed funds. They share that same structure, except the managed funds not traded on the ASX. If you've ever tried to buy a managed fund, there's reams of paperwork. There's, I don't know about you, but if you ask me to fill out some paperwork and get a verified ID, then that's that's the step that I drop out of the process. So it actually, by able to go and just buy one in your brokerage account that you already have, it just makes it so much simpler.
LICs, your 1 minute explanation of what an LIC is.
Okay, so they share a lot of similarities with ETFs.
Let's start with what LIC stands for.
LIC. Sorry, LIC is a listed investment company. So they're listed on the stock exchange, just like an ETF.
So you can buy and sell them exactly like you can an ETF.
Buy and sell exactly as you would an ETF. They also have a pool of assets, underlying investments. So when you're buying an LIC, you might be buying a pool of Australian shares, you might be buying fixed interest or international shares, depending on what that manager is investing in. The difference is that an LIC is a company, and this is where things start getting a little bit technical. A company has a defined pool of shares available. So if you go and buy CBA shares, you're buying an existing CBA share off someone else. That one share keeps getting recycled. Just like if you're going and buying a house, if you're buying an existing house, you're buying it off someone else. There's no new housing being created. And what that means is the actual share price of the listed investment company can actually differ to the value of the underlying investments underneath it, because its price is driven by supply and demand. So there's a certain amount of people prepared to sell at any one time. There's a certain amount of people prepared to buy. And whatever the current share price is the price that the sellers will sell at and the buyers will buy it. So what this means is for investors is, you need to be sort of a bit more careful when looking at LICs, because you might be buying 80 cents worth of investments for a dollar, or you might be buying $1.20's worth of investments for a dollar.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, so let's talk about Sarah's questions that we discussed before. So she wrote into our listener survey page, and specifically, I'm just going to read them out as she wrote them. Is there a right time to invest with ETF specifically? I know with single stocks, we look at the investing when the price decreases and stabilizes before buying. Is this the same with an ETF?
It's a good question, and I wish there was an easy answer. But unfortunately, there isn't. Like, if we talk about, firstly, the single stocks and buying after the price has fallen and stabilized, I think that would be a great thing to be able to do, but it's something you can really only do in hindsight. So when it comes to ETFs, I think one of the things that you're getting with them is you're removing a lot of the volatility in the share prices because they are a pooled group of shares. So if you went and bought Afterpay shares, they've had an incredible few years, but just in the last couple of weeks. There's been a couple of investment houses who've said they're overvalued, and then they might go down 20% in a day and come back 10% the next day. But that's a single share and a fairly risky share in that it's a growing company. Whereas an ETF, if you're buying the ASX 200, you're getting exposure to 200 shares there, and the individual movements of a single company are only going to be a minor reflection in that ETF price. You're foregoing a huge amount of upside in, picking the next Afterpay, but you're gaining a diversified portfolio that's going to weather the ups and downs of individual companies a lot better.
Okay, so Sarah's next question. I'm keen to get into the market now, but there's a lot of noise around possible recession, which would provide a good opportunity to buy into the market. Is it better just to get in and start, or wait until this occurs? Is this speculation noise that I should be ignoring? And I'll just note here that Sarah is somewhere between 25 and 34 years of age.
Yeah, so there is a lot of noise around at the moment, but go back every year for the last 5-10 years, and there's always been something that's been creating noise. So I think it's, as an investor, you need to be careful of that noise. And there's a lot of active managers out there who are they're the fund managers who try to beat the market. And in about 2015, 2016, a lot of them started going overweight cash because they thought the market was overvalued. And so they've been sitting on extra cash during a period where the market's continued to go up. There's been Brexit, there's been Trump, there's been trade wars, there's been all these things that have happened during that period. And some of these fund managers are sitting there seriously underperforming because they've been waiting for the crash to happen, or waiting for the markets to come off. So you need to be careful with that, timing the market based on current events. But on the other side of that, if I reflect back to that 2005 to 2007 period, going all in when, markets have been doing pretty well for the last 10 years, that carries its own risk, because the longer the markets continue to go up, the closer we get to a fall. Now, that might be next month, it might be in 5 years' time, you just don't know. So I think one of the investing approaches you can take to mitigate any of that noise is like a principle called dollar cost averaging, where you drip your money in over time. Ignore what's happening that day, ignore the share price, just sort of go on the first of the month or the first of the quarter or whatever date is a memorable date to you. You invest some money and you do that over time, and that allows you to, you'll be buying more shares when markets are down, you'll be buying less shares when markets are up, but you're getting the benefit of it. All sort of evens itself out.
Yeah. So just tell me, what's it like for you doing ETF Watch? I mean, how do you feel about it?
It's been really exciting because it's just been this period where ETFs have just exploded in popularity. And when I launched the site, I didn't think it had happened so quick. But, I've got friends who aren't in and around the finance and wealth management world who now talk about ETFs and are investing in ETFs. And so it's been great seeing that. And, I think when I launched the site, there was about 90 or 100 ETF products available. There's now 200. So there's twice as many products available, some really interesting ones. So it's just, really exciting. And the best thing about it is it's putting the power back in the investors' hands. Not long ago, you needed to involve financial advisors to invest in a lot of these products. They're now available for a well-informed individual investor to go and invest in themselves. So it's been great to be a part of that and to be helping people, make the right investing choices. So yeah, it's been really great.
How much time does it take? How much work have you put into it?
It varies. Depends on how much content I'm writing. That's where most of the work goes, in writing content.
Mm-hmm.
We replatformed the site earlier in the year, which took a lot longer than we hoped, and there's still a few little bugs that we're trying to sort of iron out. We're not a news site. We're not putting daily news out. We're not putting clickbaity articles either. We're trying to write content that's meaningful, that lasts the test of time. Our motto is, less is more.
So it's a, you want to make a solid resource, is it?
Yeah, a solid resource that, you know, I want to write content that's just as relevant in 3 years' time as it is today. You're not seeing a new post every second day, but, you know, we try to write a new post every fortnight or so and have them really meaningful.
So Sarah was asking about emerging markets. How would someone use an ETF to access emerging markets?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of emerging market ETFs available now. You can go to ETF Watch and go to our fund search, and one of the search criteria you can use is emerging markets, and that'll show you all the ETFs available. From memory, there's about half a dozen or more that focus in on that. They all have subtle differences. You know, some emerging market indexes include China. Others don't include China now. There's some that are more skewed to the Asian region, and there's some that are more kind of the whole of world. So yeah, there's a bunch available. So I recommend just having a look and working out which sort of emerging market ETF works best for you.
So an ETF, if we're talking about, say, an emerging market ETF or I think they're called thematic ETFs, they're all based on an index, and someone is researching and publishing that index. Is that how it works?
Yeah. So
have we got an example maybe that we can talk about that illustrates this?
Yes. So they're passive ETFs, like we talked about, like the ASX 200, where they just follow the broad index. They're based on what's called market capitalization. So they're investing as per company size. You know, the ASX 200 is CBA occupies about 10% of that index. It's the largest company in Australia at the moment, and it occupies about 10% of that index due to its size. It's worth, I don't know, $150 billion or something. And so when you're buying an ASX 200 ETF, you're buying 10% of CBA. And so that index methodology will sit behind that, and there's an index provider, for example, Standard & Poor's, S&P, who create that index methodology. And there's actually some more rules behind it. It's not just the largest 200 Australian companies, that it's also looks at their liquidity, and it excludes certain companies, like it excludes investment companies, it excludes LICs from that, making up that index. Whilst they sound very simple, there's actually a few rules underneath them. Then when you get into the thematic ETFs or smart beta or strategic beta, they've got a few different names. That's where they throw out this market capitalization weighting, and they come up with their own rules. Those rules depends on what that index is sort of focused on. And a good example is there's an ETF called TECH, T-E-C-H, which is the ETF Securities Global Technology ETF. And they have rules in that ETF about country exposure. So they're obviously focused on technology companies, but they don't want to be fully exposed to the US, where most of the big technology companies come out of. So they put caps on how much they can invest in the US. And they also have rules about how they determine what a technology company is. And so that ETF excludes some companies that you or I might think are technology companies. For example, Amazon. Amazon's not included in that index because, based on their rules, it's a consumer discretionary or a retailer rather than a technology company. So their index methodology explains all of this and explains what constitutes a technology ETF. It puts caps on how much can be invested in a single company. I think it has a 4% or a 5% cap per company, so it can't be 20% Facebook and, you know, 15% Apple. It puts caps on. So someone or a group of people have created these rules that ETF must follow. Mm. And so those smart beta ETFs all have a bunch of these rules in place to keep that in line with its, whatever its index is.
Yeah, so if you're looking at investing in one of these kind of ETFs, the ETF provider will let you know what index it is following?
Yeah. So there's an index that, for example, that tech ETF follows. I can't off the top of my head remember what the index name mm-hmm. is. So there's a bunch of index providers like S&P, mm-hmm. Sol Active's another one. There's a whole heap of them around, most of them US companies, who create these indexes.
Yeah.
And so that ETF provider will say, this tracks the XYZ index.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go and Google that XYZ index and go and read more information about it.
Some of these ETFs are created with one eye on marketing. They're looking for sexy words, aren't they?
Yeah. And that's one thing you got to be careful about with the smart beta is, A, marketing, and that's why we've seen a lot of tech ones, because tech's been really popular. And the other thing is they're often created chasing like last year's winner. And so, you know, if a sector's done really well, you tend to see an ETF come out not long later. And then they were able to promote that has done, 20% for the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Last year's winner is not necessarily next year's winner.
Mm.
And so that's where you need to be careful to not buy into the hype of what's been a really strong performer and may not be a strong performer in the future. And the other thing with a lot of these ones, like the robotics and artificial intelligence, is it's actually really hard to find companies that focus just on that. And so when they create these indexes that they follow, they have to put these rules in place that they, X percent of that business activity is robotics, for example. But you might be buying companies that their core business is something else, and there's a small part of them that does robotics, for example. So, it may not be true to label that, you're getting robotics exposure. You might be getting exposure to other sort of companies that, have a bit of robotics happening.
Yeah, no, this is an interesting aspect to it, isn't it? Because ETFs are marketed as being hands-off, you're tracking an index, you don't have to think about it, whereas it is still sometimes worthwhile researching that index to see how they are defining stocks within that particular theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And are those stocks giving you what you're really expecting?
Mm.
The robotics ones, you might end up with a bunch of computer chip manufacturers.
Yeah.
Who are doing AI, but their core business is selling computer chips to put in laptops or iPads. And
or they can be agricultural companies as well that happen to use robotics in their packing facilities.
So you definitely need to do your research when it comes to getting into those more niche type exposures.
Yeah. Michael Burry recently has come out and says that he sees a bubble in passive investing. Now, people might know Michael Burry, but if they've seen the movie The Big Short, it's the Christian Bale character, isn't it, The Big Short, who foresaw what was going
movie.
To happen. Oh, it's a fantastic movie, isn't it? Really highly recommended. It's on Netflix as well, so very easy to find. Anyway, Michael Burry seems to think there's a bubble in ETFs in passive investing. What's your reaction to this guru?
Yeah, so there's been a little bit of noise around that. Firstly, I think the media has kind of sensationalized a lot of what he's said in particular in calling it a bubble, because what he's saying doesn't meet the definition of a bubble. Bubbles are where there's, some kind of asset just gets this mania around it, and it's this greater fool theory of if I buy today, there'll be someone who's a greater fool tomorrow to buy it off me. It's actually a great book called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
Mm-hmm.
That's it was written in the mid-1800s. It's a little bit of a difficult read because it's a little bit ye olde English, but it talks a lot about the bubbles in history, and they all follow the exact same path, and it's really quite fascinating. Probably the most recent one we saw was Bitcoin. But what he's saying is people blindly buying into ETFs are pushing up prices of larger companies more than smaller companies because they tend to be focused on the larger companies. So in Australia, our biggest ETFs are the ones that follow the ASX 200, which are the largest companies in Australia. And so the theory is if that's all people are investing in, then those 200 companies' prices will be pushed up because there's more demand for their shares just because people are buying ETFs. And it means that the smaller end of the market gets left behind. So he's not so much calling it a bubble. He's just saying that it's distorting one part of the market over another. But there's always active managers out there looking to take advantage of mispricing. There's a huge funds management industry of highly paid, very intelligent people who are looking for those opportunities.
With incredible tools at their disposal find these price mismatches.
Yeah, so they're always out there bringing the market back into alignment. And the other thing is that a lot of these big fund managers have mandates to invest in, you know, a high percentage of the market anyway. So, if, you know, for example, a large company fund manager, they might have to invest 90% in, you know, the ASX 200. And so they've been doing that anyway since the dawn of funds management. And they're still buying, like if they have money coming in the door, they've got to invest it. And they might not be investing as per the index, like they might not be putting 10% in CBA, but they'll be putting 8% in CBA or 12% in CBA and sort of tinkering around the edges. So the money's always been going in anyway. And now it's just, you know, the growth of index investing's just sort of put it in more exactly along the lines of the size of the makeup of the share market rather than the tinkering around the edges. So I don't, like, it's definitely not a bubble. I think that's sensationalizing. And even this theory that it's pushing up the large company prices, I think we're a long way away from that becoming a reality when there's so many people out there ready to take advantage of any mispricing.
Yeah, and you'd have to assume the vast weight of money that's in the superannuation industry would be a far bigger distortion than people putting money in ETFs.
Yeah, that's right. I think the superannuation industry is $3 trillion now, and, you know, probably $2 trillion of that's invested in the share market, and, you know, 9.5% of people's wages are going in there every week.
Yeah, and it's just growing, and it's got to go somewhere.
Yes,
and there's no returns anywhere else.
Yeah. So the argument sort of falls over there.
Mm. Do you have any kids, by the way?
Yeah, I do. I've got two kids.
Yeah,
yeah.
How invested are they?
Yeah, I've got some. I've actually invested in products called investment bonds for them, which are quite a simple product, but a bit complex in trying to explain. But they're good. They're like a good.
They're tax effective for
kids. So I can put a bit of money in every birthday for them and let that grow. They're in index options though, so they're just sitting in Australian and international share index options.
Yeah.
So hopefully when they're kind of 25, there's a nice house deposit there for them or something. And then, you know, they're a bit young to actually learn about investing, but definitely once they're old enough, I'll be teaching them the basics.
Yeah. No, great to have a parent like that.
Yeah.
Before we close off, ETF Watch. Okay, tell us a bit more about ETF Watch and where we can find it and what people will get out of it.
Yeah, so etfwatch.com.au. I've talked about the fund finder, so you can go to that and search for all the funds available on the ASX. We've got a blog that's on the homepage. We follow all the news that's happening around the ETF and LIC market as well. There's a bunch of educational resources in there that sort of help with the basics of ETFs and LICs. And we have a mailing list that you can sign up to. We tend to just send a monthly email to the mailing list, letting them know what's happened in the last month and what new blogs that we have. So well worth signing up to that. So yeah, just etfwatch.com.au. And, you know, if you want to get in contact, there's a contact form there.
And you're non-aligned, aren't you?
Absolutely, 100% independent. So privately owned. You know, we do advertising with a number of players in the industry, but that's fully disclosed. So yeah, 100% non-aligned, and will always be that way.
So that's great. It was great to have you on because I wanted to find someone who was independent to talk about ETFs because I can talk. There's so many people in the ETF industry I can talk to, but it's great to find someone who's independent as well. Steve, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. Great to be here. And thanks for those questions, Sarah. It was great to answer them, and I hope they helped. But if you want to find out more, please go to ETF Watch.
Fantastic.
Cool.
Shares for Beginners is for information and educational purposes only. It isn't financial advice, and you shouldn't buy or sell any investments based on what you've heard here. Any opinion or commentary is the view of the speaker only, not Shares for Beginners. This podcast doesn't replace professional advice regarding your personal financial needs, circumstances, or current situation. Thanks to Christopher Soulos for music production with that special Greekalicious flavour. Remember, music always flows, even when the money won't.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.